Welcome back to A Fresh Story, the podcast where we have conversations about brave decisions to start over again. I'm Jenny.
And I'm Olivia, and we're so glad you're here today.
Hello, 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 sister.
Hello, how are you doing today?
It's nonstop raining here in New York, but we had such a great conversation recently with Laura High, who made us laugh so hard. Like, we had the best time talking to her. Mm-hmm. It was one of those awesome conversations we say is like music, right? It's like we just kind of came together and we learned so much, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've learned so much from her on TikTok in the past too. Like, people that are willing to speak up about their experiences like she does are such important educators when they want to step into that role. And she is doing such a beautiful job advocating for donor-conceived people.
Yeah, so Laura is a comedian, and she's also a huge advocate for donor-conceived people. She was a sperm donor child, and she does a lot of work around giving sperm donor-conceived people a voice. And I think she has a podcast, and we also talked a lot about her divorce and how to break out of a toxic relationship and all of these things. So it was a really interesting, educational, funny, honest episode, and it was awesome to meet her. She's wonderful. Go give her a follow. And please remember to rate, review, and subscribe to A Fresh Story so that we can keep telling fresh start stories. Laura is a New York City-based stand-up comedian and divorcee who is a content creator on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. She's also the host of her own podcast, which is called Insemination, which is a wonderful podcast. And I came across Laura, I think, on Instagram. I saw one of your Instagram reels about your stand-up about divorce. And actually, I feel like a lot of people tagged me in it to come check it out because you just took like a really interesting perspective on it. So I shoot my shot with you and DM'd you, and you were kind enough to come on the show. So thank you for being here today.
Oh my God. Well, thank you for inviting me. Like, there was no shot to shoot. I was a very, very happy, willing participant. Oh, fuck yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, I love it.
Anyone who's ever seen me do stand up or who has obviously seen my content knows I love talking about sperm donation, because that's like all about like my advocacy is for donor conceived people. Yeah. But in reality, like, honestly, the jokes that like really like are really from my heart are my jokes about divorce. That was like one of the most traumatizing things I ever went through. Uh-huh. And it is unbelievably rewarding for me when I do like my stand up about divorce and then I have like divorcees in the crowd and then we talk afterwards about it and there's a healing. That means so much to me that it's like you're and you are.
Yeah, I get that. I really get that. I pretend I'm going to have a stand up about my divorce someday. And so I actually said I was on a podcast last week and I gave the old like, oh, I dropped 180 pounds joke. And the podcast host had never heard it. So they were cracking up. I told my mom who went through her own divorce in the 90s. And she was like, I've been telling that joke forever. I'm like, yeah, but mom, this generation hasn't heard that joke. Okay. So I'm going to leave that. Yeah. So no, but we're so excited to have you here.
So I like kind of stay away from like the podcast scheduling. I really don't know who's coming on the podcast until like right before, a couple days before. And so my sister Olivia was like, you know, Laura High is coming on. And I was like, wait. And she was like, she's coming on to talk about divorce. And I was like, wait, is that the girl that talks all about like donors like and donor insemination? And she was like, I think so. Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, because that's how I know you is from TikTok and talking about that. And I really give TikTok so much credit for changing the way I've been thinking about things like donor insemination, you know, adoption, things like that. Just getting so many different voices from people who have had that experience. And you speak so well on it, and your advocacy work is obviously so amazing and so important. And obviously, like, you know, touching people all over the world. So that's how I know you. We're so thrilled to have you here.
It's thank you. I always appreciate hearing it because there are absolutely times where it feels like you're just like screaming into the void and you're like,
yeah.
Anyone listening?
Yeah.
And it's hard when especially you're going up against a literal multi-billion dollar industry and you're mm-hmm. like, is making any bit of difference? And so I do really appreciate hearing those things because it does feel like, okay, if at least a couple of people are hearing it, then that is the start. It is the trickle down effect.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I know that it will pay off in the long run. So thank mm-hmm. you.
Yeah, I want to get into it. I really do. I want to get, we'll do like, we'll cover everything.
How are you today? Where are you? You're in New York City. Is that right?
I am in New York City. I am right now. I'm in Manhattan.
Nice.
But literally after this podcast, I am picking up and heading to Washington, D.C. Myself and my second husband are headlining at the District Sports Bar, which we're very excited about. Love performing in Washington, D.C. Crowds there are just so much fun. They're absolutely fantastic. And I wrote some jokes specifically for them. So I'm very excited to do them tonight. And I always love doing a little bit of a road trip with my husband. So we always
yeah.
have
fun.
You're both comedians. Like, yeah, obviously, you're a comedian, but he's a comedian, too, is my extension of that question. Did you meet doing comedy?
Yes. No, we met during comedy, and he is a phenomenal stand-up comedian. Oh, my God. We knew each other for years. I actually knew him when I was dating my first husband.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, like, knew each other for years.
Yeah.
I thought he was, like, super good. And I always like tell the thing about with Dave, cause people always ask me, they were like, how did you know, weren't you nervous about getting remarried again? Mm-hmm. Weren't you nervous about, and they're like, how did you know that, like, how did you feel safe with Dave? And I'm like, oh, I will fucking tell you. I will tell you what happened with Dave. And how I knew this was the man I was going to marry. It was two pieces. One, it was our first date. He asked me out for our first date and I was, newly leaving my first husband. And I was like, I had been diagnosed with PTSD. I had always had an anxiety disorder. And it was a fun time. I was literally having PTSD attacks or anxiety attacks. I want to say, almost every single day. Like if I had 2 days in a row where I didn't have one, it was like a miracle. I was like, holy shit, and I'm not crying today.
Yeah.
And I told him, I was like, I'm not ready right now, but I will let you know when I am ready. And he said, okay, let me know when you're ready. And I would love to take you out on a date. And I said, okay, absolutely. And months went by and I was like, okay, I'm ready for a first date. And he said, okay. And he's like, I'm going to take you to a restaurant called Kraft. If you haven't been to Kraft, it's in New York City. It's by Union Square. And
is that Tom Colicchio? Is that Tom Colicchio?
It is Tom Colicchio. Yeah. It is my favorite restaurant. It is my
favorite restaurant.
So you got to get the short rib. You got to get the gnocchi, potato puree. I mean, it is out of this world. It is so good. And he was like, we're going to go there. And so he had been doing reconnaissance on me for months. And I told him, because he was a server at California Pizza Kitchen at the time, he couldn't afford to take me to Kraft. I was like, dude, no. I was like, that's so sweet of you. Thank you. But let's maybe go somewhere like a little bit like more affordable. Because like otherwise, he's going to be dropping easily $250.
Right.
And it was like, I did not want to do that to him.
Right.
And he said, no. I've been saving up for this for months. We're going to go to Kraft. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah. As an investment.
Okay. And I go up and he's in this cute little sweater with a bow tie. He already knew that I loved flowers. So he had fresh flowers waiting. And I have this obsession with whales. And he made me a whale pop-up book.
Oh my
and
God.
I was like, oh shit. He is not playing around. Like, oh my God.
Yeah.
And it was the most amazing first date. Like it was literally like I could feel that he was going, I'm going to be your husband. Yeah. And this is my like this is proposal one. Like it was like
I was gonna say that's more than most women get for their proposal. Like what you got on that first date, yeah.
And also our wedding reception was at Kraft.
Aww.
They have like a private dining room. it was like family only, and it was just, and so that's what we did. But then, and then, so that was number one. But then number two was he came over to my mom's house to like meet her for the first time. Well, he had met her a little bit here and there, but like, this mm-hmm. was like the first time like, I am dating this person. And she, it was very nice. He was so sweet. And she was getting ready to move out of her apartment. And she was like, and she's in her 60s. And she's like, yeah, I have so much work I got to do. I got this. I have to get this ready. Like literally next week, this has to be ready for photos. I have to move so much furniture. Like, holy shit. And Dave was like, well, I'm free this Sunday. How about I just come in and help you? Mm-hmm. And like, no, sweetheart, thank you so much. But like, I would need you here at like 8 a.m. It would literally be moving around boxes all day. Thank you so much. But no. And he's like, no, it's my day off. I love it. I'm such a morning person. I would love to help you. And and I know because Sunday the subways are horrible. And he lived in Brooklyn at the time. It took him easily 2 hours to get to my mom's apartment. And he was there bright and chipper at 8 a.m. and immediately like, hey, Johnny on the spot, just like, and moving shit around. And like, he was so sweet with my mom. He kept her laughing. And my mom looked at me and she was like, you're going to fucking marry him. Okay. Like this is him. Like, I will arrange this marriage. And I just was like watching him be as sweet as he was with my mom. And the thing was, like, I didn't have to ask. It was just, he wanted to do this. And he was really right. Like actively wanted to be helpful and to be there and to just immediately be part of my family. And that literally just melted my heart in the best way.
Well, energy attracts energy. Right. And so you clearly, we've just been talking to you for 8 minutes and I can tell you have an amazing energy. I'm like, this girl is going places.
You're part of us now. Like you're in the group now. You can't get out. So you should probably also
like
know
you
that.
Have, and I'm like looking at you thinking like, oh my God, you're going to be like, I can see you. Like you have a, I mean, we'll get into it, but like you clearly put out into the world such beautiful energy. And so it's not surprising to me that somebody would wait for you and invest that time and the energy and the money, right, to be with you, because you're one of those people that clearly, like, everybody wants to be around, which I'm not surprised that you have, like, the career you have and things like that. So I love that. And you know what? I just want to say, like, as a single person who's gone through a divorce, you know, it's really hard to be like, are there good people out there? Like, I lost all hope in men, like all hope. I thought it was like a good man is like a mythological creature to me. Like, and so I get very emotional listening to people's stories like you to be like, okay, it exists. Like, it's a real thing. It's not like a Yeti that's out there. So thank you for sharing that. I love that.
Oh no, absolutely. And I totally, like, my parents are divorced. Most of my family, is divorced.
Yeah.
My father is on his third marriage.
Yep.
Like most of my family has had, like a lot of my family's had multiple marriages.
Yeah. Well, we come from the same, where are you from? New York originally?
Yeah.
Yeah,
well, I have a lot of family on the West Coast.
Okay.
My grandparents had a very tumultuous marriage. I mean, it was tough. It was just with them. I mean, they did love each other. They did, but it was I think they got divorced twice.
And wow.
Yeah. I mean, they had it was a complicated relationship and between them, and it like was not their fault. They were two extremely, like, my grandfather's a Holocaust survivor. So, yeah. I mean, we are talking about trauma of like the traumiest of trauma. Uh-huh. And then my grandmother we're not 100% sure exactly what happened. But she was definitely born with mental illness. If I remember correctly, and because it was very hard to diagnose her. It was because it was as she got older was really when she got diagnosed for the first time. Mm. But she got diagnosed, like, it was sort of like they kept going round and round between something with like a narcissist, sociopath with psychotic tendencies with a below average IQ.
Yeah.
She was like in psych wards in the 1960s. She had mm-hmm. shock therapy. Like,
yeah.
But had a traumatic childhood. Like it was it was horrific what happened to her.
Yeah.
And they sort of trauma bonded, I think, but it was a very tumultuous marriage, but there was always something that brought them back. Like they definitely like cared about each other. Like they did. And all he wanted to do was protect her.
Yeah.
But it was, so I grew up around very I didn't have like fantastic examples. It was just not.
I was gonna say, I'm like, I think we might be cousins.
Yeah. Like,
no, I don't know.
It's possible.
Yeah.
Highly possible. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It's quite possible. You could be. Are you Ashkenazi Jewish?
We are. And we're from
99.6, yeah. Baby.
Then all right, then somewhere in the family tree, we definitely are related.
Yeah, we got that shock therapy thing going for us. So I understand. Well, Laura, let's go back. Why don't you take us back to the beginning of your fresh start story? I want to hear everything.
It was definitely, I mean, my life changed. It was a baptism of fire was my divorce from my first husband. I will say, and I do think that like, and I kind of want to like put a little asterisk with it. I love how right now on TikTok, on Instagram and social media, we are talking about like narcissism. We're talking about toxicity. We are talking about abusive relationships. I love that we're doing that. And I love that we're so putting a pin in it, but yeah. I will say with full transparency, I am not the victim of my marriage. Both my ex and I were fucking horrible to each other. Horrible. And there was no abuser, abusee. Like, this was both him and I, like, royally fucked up with each other. And we both, like, we gave as good as we got. And I want to just put that out there, because I do think that as important as it is that we are talking about, that we're really highlighting what an abusive relationship is, and we're really like trying very hard to make sure that victims like get platforms. Yeah. I really just want to make it clear that it's like, oh, no, this was not my best moment. Like, this was. Yeah.
Were you young? How old were you-ish?
We started dating when I was 20. And then we got married. Was I 26 when we got married? I was just about to turn 26. Mm. I believe. I think
it's the same age I was. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was, and we were essentially both of each other's very first relationship.
Yeah.
I had a very, very short relationship, literally, 2 months, 3 months in high school. And that was like literally it. And then he had never dated anybody. We were really like each other's first real relationship.
Yeah.
And he was like no one I had ever met. He was, and I still 100% like will absolutely say he is genuinely one of the most talented, creative, intelligent human beings that walk this earth. I have not spoken to him in probably at least a year at this point, but I have no doubt that he still holds that up. Yeah. And I was absolutely enamored with him, because it was just like I had never seen anybody speak as eloquently as he did, especially like when it came to like politics. Literally everybody wanted to know his opinion, because he could understand politics, pull out history. Like, he would remember vice presidents from like the 1930s. Like, he was like that kind of person.
Yeah,
right. He was who you always wanted on your trivia team. And my God, he was talented. This is such a talented comedic actor. And I was just so blown away by how unique of an individual he was. And him and I were both such lonely people, that when we found each other, we bonded, and it was like, holy shit, we found each other. And the amount him and I laughed together and just cracked each other the fuck up was incredible. And there were just so many wonderful, just wonderful, happy memories. The issue that him and I, and like, as I am now 35 years old and I can look back on the situation, is that him and I both individually had a lot of issues that just conflicted with each other. And we basically, when we were in couples therapy, our couples therapist really hit the nail on the head, which was we had just different worldviews. There was nothing wrong with that. It's just we had different priorities and goals. And but the problem was we so desperately wanted to be together that we could not see that we were not right for each other. And what ended up happening was it turned really, really toxic and we started taking shit out on each other.
Yeah.
Because subconsciously we knew we weren't right for each other, but we loved each other so much. But that it turned off, like it just, and it sucks because it's a big regret that I have is not breaking up with him. Or I should say us not ending the relationship when I think that we really should have, because I do think if we did end the relationship when it really should have ended, we would have absolutely still been best friends to this day.
Right.
And I would be working with him. We would be creating videos and we would still have that friendship and that bond. And that's a piece that I do regret that I should have.
You said something, you started with something, which I would like to go back to, which is, You understand that this was a mutual thing, right? That it was not that one person was completely taking care of their side of the street. And I think it's interesting because so I am recently, I was engaged to somebody. I was with somebody for 10 years and then we were engaged and we broke up and I just got married to somebody else. And so I am kind of living that second marriage thing without the divorce. And I really left my first relationship, that previous engagement, thinking like I had my shit handled. I did all my shit. I was in the right. And again, it was not an abusive relationship. It just wasn't the right relationship. But I was like, it was really on him. It felt like it was really on him in a lot of ways. And now it's through the relationship that I'm in now, my marriage now, that I'm able to be like, oh, I reacted really weirdly to that thing. And the difference is he and I can be like, whoa, I reacted weirdly to that thing. Let's talk about that. Let's figure that out together. And I wonder how much of that is your experience as well of like realizing that your side of the street was not cleaned up only now when you're with your husband.
No, I mean, I absolutely not. That is the thing that I will say that if we have to look at a silver lining with my divorce, hands down, the silver lining was it got me into therapy. Mm-hmm. I will say growth that I will say doing divorce is like the ultimate shadow work.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You will learn some dark shit out about yourself. I mean, and I'm not just saying like little itty like little darkness, like, oh my God, like I eat ice cream at 1 a.m. No. You're going to learn your fucking demons and you're going to like the dark shit that you would not say to anybody. You're going to face them. And it is scary and it is hard, but if you can do it in a genuine way, you will come out the other side and you will be so much, it will be worth it. And I do think for him and I, and this is something that I was literally just talking with my husband Dave about, is that we put, and sort of piggybacking off of what you said, we put in my opinion, in society today, we put a lot of emphasis on marriages take work. Marriage takes work. It takes a lot of, it takes so much work. And that's true. Marriage takes work. It does. But in my opinion, we should be putting much more emphasis on picking the right person. Because when you pick the right person, the work is 10,000 times easier.
Yeah. And it's joyous.
And it's joyous. Yeah. And that was the difference between my ex-husband and my new husband. And that is not a knock at all at my ex-husband. It was just, we were not right together. Mm-hmm. We were not the right fit. So the amount of work for us to just get through a fucking day was like tumultuous because we did not see the world the same way.
Yeah.
But my new husband and I, we do see this world the same way. And so like things that would be a literal fight all day between my ex-husband and I are not a fight between my new husband and I, because we're just like, no, I got it. That's cool. And it's done. Mm-hmm. It's cool. And because of that, we're able to genuinely bring out the best in each other, because it's like, it's a constant, because we know we are working towards the same goals.
Yeah.
Because we have the same ethics and morals.
Right. And I was going to say, I actually wrote this down because I didn't want to forget to ask you. going from meeting him at a very young age and getting married, I'm going to just assume, because I was the same age, that you didn't do any of the inner work before you got married, right?
Also, so,
right. So
Laura's
so,
face was like, oh my God, no, of course not.
And on top of that, right, you are carrying around, well, a lot of generational trauma, right? Mm-hmm. And also a lot of generational trauma that's not yours, right? And so, what did you do between these two relationships to do that inner work?
Therapy. That was a big one.
Yeah.
Therapy. So we were doing couples therapy and individual therapy. I started anxiety medication for the first time as well. Yep. It was a lot of just, Laura, you don't have your shit together as much as you think you do. Mm-hmm. And you have some very serious, like very serious problems.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not a therapist, and I don't know if this term is still like used, but at least when I was in therapy, I really, really struggled with codependency.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Heavily struggled with codependency. That was how my family dynamic worked. I was the buffer.
I mean, isn't a comedian just a people pleaser on stage?
My validation are your little clappy claps. Like, yeah, that's right. What I feel alive. Like, it is no shock whatsoever that I live or die by your laughs. And I was the buffer. I was the comedian for my family. I kept everybody happy so that when literal things are getting thrown around and there's like volcanic fights happening, I come in and go, I'm the cute grandchild mm-hmm. daughter, la 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 la, mm-hmm. and that was my job. And I was, in very particular settings, I was allowed to feel sad and angry, but there were a lot of settings in which no, that is not happening right now.
Yep.
And so because of that, I really did not have a skill set to validate my own emotions. And I still struggle with that today. And it mm-hmm. is something that it is a
yes.
with me. Validating my own emotions, being able to stand up for myself, because one of the things that like was a toxic piece of like my ex and I was like, I definitely like enabled a lot of stuff in him. And that is something that like I have to own the fact that it was like I knew things were off, and the fact that like I didn't stand my ground and I just enabled it was detrimental to him and me. And that was bad. And then what ended up happening was, and then my own toxic pattern started emerging from that, because subconsciously I knew something was wrong.
Yeah.
But I handle it in a healthy way, so it came out in other ways.
Right.
And that's
Jenny, I feel like, yeah, like you probably relate to a lot of that.
Oh, I related to literally everything you just said. I mean, the other night, my husband and I, it's weird. We only got married 11 days ago, so it's a little weird to use the word husband.
Oh my God, congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been exciting. So we were playing poker, and he was giving me like tips on how to play. And he was like, do you want me to stop giving you tips? And I was like, I did, because I want you to just play the game. You know, I was like, I don't care if I'm going to be bad at it. I just want to play the game. It was so hard for me to just be like, yeah, I do want you to stop giving me tips, because I was like, well, that's kind of like controlling and manipulative of me to like tell him that. No, that's just something that you want. And it's so hard, I think, for us little girls that grow up, you know, curing generational trauma and being these little Shayna mamalas, you know, that are running in and out of rooms, and aren't we here on, you know, on the high holy days, and we're making everybody happy. And it's like so tough to then be like, actually, yeah, I just want you to like stop talking about that. And I just identify with everything you just said. And I think it does make it really hard to be, you know, like present and and not codependent in relationships, because like, you know, control is not love, but codependency is its own form of control, right?
It is. And it is something where it's like codependency turns toxic so fast.
Yeah.
It is. Oh my God. And it really, it gets toxic so quickly, and it becomes so destructive to you and your relationships so fast. And it's been, I will say that therapy has definitely helped me. Mm-hmm. That has been a huge piece of like what has helped. But I can't lie and say that like with my new husband, it's definitely been 1,000 times easier because he's my person. And I know him and I have like, his dad has a great line where it's like, you have to find somebody who measures the world by the same yardstick.
I love that.
Which I love it. And that was one good line. And then the other good line that he had was, there's lines in the sand and then there's lines in the concrete. Find someone who has lines. Yeah. And I'm like, such good lines, such good lines. Shout out to Ron. Wonderful lines. And because I have that trust in Dave, even when him and I do have fights, even when him and I when I'm having issues, I know he is actively trying to make sure that I am working towards not what he defines as a healthy place, but as I and we define as a healthy place. Mm-hmm. And that's a very big difference between him and my ex. And that's, again, that's not a knock on my ex. It's just the fact that him and I saw the world differently. Yeah. So what he perceived as healthy and as the right thing to do was not what I perceived it as. And it wasn't the fact that either of us were wrong. It was just very different opinions on how people are supposed to operate in this world and what mattered, because him and I just different things mattered to us. Yeah. And that it unfortunately took us into marriage to figure that out, which sucks.
It's that interesting. Yeah. I feel like one of the things, you know, sometimes when we don't have great modeling of relationships, I don't consider myself somebody that's terribly influenced by like social media or anything, but I do realize that I sort of became this vacuum and I would sort of absorb these little cultural norms. So it was like opposites attract, or like be with somebody who like makes you think differently, or, you know, your partner's not supposed to be everything to you. And in that, I ended up attracting a person that was really different from me, like you said, and really measured, measured the world differently than I did. And when I got with Thomas, I was like, oh, you can just be with somebody that's like you. Like, full stop, you know, he's like me. We see the world the same way. And it, like you said, it makes things so much easier to just get through that day to day. Like, he likes me and he's like me. And it's just, he genuinely wants to see me succeed. And I think, and like you said, in that way where it's success for me too. Like, he's not making up these definitions of success that I should want. He wants me to succeed as I want to succeed. And I think that we get sold so many like bill of goods of what a relationship should be and how much work it should be. And it can just be happy.
I really do think that if like there's anything that anybody can take away from it, and if I could like send out one piece of advice, is if you really have to be honest with yourself as to how much work you are doing dating in a mm-hmm. relationship, like dating. And like, yes, relationships take work, but it shouldn't be pulling teeth mm-hmm. to agree on the same moral plane of existence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like if your partner does not value what you value, that is not the right relationship. If you have to convince your partner to value what you value, I'm not just saying it, literally showing you, that's not the right person for you. And that's not a knock at that person. That's just, you guys don't share the same things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you need to find somebody where the work is a lot easier, and you will, I cannot stress enough that you will know it. When Dave and I got together, and I always say this, it was like, it was almost like this mythical, ethereal feeling. Mm-hmm. And I remember it was like he hit a chord in me that like I didn't know existed.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew, and it's always the same whenever I talk to people who, like, you know, like, oh shit, no, that's that person's person. They knew within a few, like, within a literal short period of time of, like, oh no, I'm marrying that person. Yeah. That's my person. Mm-hmm. You know. And that isn't to say, like, that they immediately got married. Like, they took the time. They still did the work. Mm-hmm. They did it. But mm-hmm. They knew. And it was the same thing with Dave and I. We knew very, very quickly, like, oh shit.
I love that. Speaking of knowing things, I want to go back for a second and then I want to go into your other stuff. Were you always an actress, comedian, like, since childhood?
Oh yeah, no, I've been on the stage since I was 3 years old. I didn't get into comedy until I was here, until I was in New York City. I had no idea that I was going to be a stand-up comic. If you told high school, college Laura that she was going to be a stand-up comic, she'd be like, what? Are you fucking kidding me? I can't do that. That would have blown her socks off. That was one of the coolest surprises as an adult.
So what were you doing acting as a child? You just, like, you wanted to act, or did somebody put you on stage?
Oh, I just was, like, in every school play possible. Okay. Theater. You know, I have a BA in theater. I'm actually a very classically trained Shakespearean actor. I certainly don't come across that way on stage as I do stand up, but it was like, oh no, I had like shitload of Shakespeare training. And like,
mm-hmm. Where did you go to school? Where did you go to college?
Nazareth College in Rochester, New York.
Okay.
Phenomenal theater program. Amazing theater. And they worked you really hard. But it was, I know that my training there prepped me for being a comic.
Well, the highest form of acting and presenting is comedy. You have to be a smart person to be comedic. Like, you can't, you know, you have, because it's comedy, from what I know, is really sociology. It's all sociology, right? And so you kind of have to be aware of what's going on with people to be somebody that can stand up on stage and present. So what was your first stand-up you've ever did?
First time I did stand-up was, I took a stand-up class at Caroline's on Broadway. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. the club is now closed, but it was like one of the number one rated mm-hmm. comedy clubs worldwide. And I took a class there with the incredible Linda Smith. Unfortunately, she doesn't teach comedy anymore, but God, she was brilliant. She's such a brilliant teacher. And I started to, because I wanted to learn comedy structure better, because I was hired as a comedic actress. That was always like what I got booked for, mm-hmm. From being like the best friend. And yeah. I just wanted to understand how jokes worked in a much more, like, I would say, like, mathematical, scientific way. And also what happened, I was doing a play in New York City and an audience member was like, are you a stand-up comic? I'm like, no, I'm not. And they're like, because you read your lines like you are a comic. And I loved stand-up comedy, loved it. So I took the class and I so enjoyed it. It was so much fun. And then I remember we were about to do our graduation show, which was on the Caroline stage, which was really cool because I grew up watching comics at Caroline's. Like, that was a big thing I did in high school. That was like the coolest thing to go do, is to go see stand up at Caroline's. And I got up on stage. I remember the second before I got up, I forgot my entire set. And then I went up on stage, I grabbed the mic, and it was, I will never forget this feeling of, oh my God, I'm home. I'm home. Yeah. This is it. And it was this shit feeling. And it was just like, I knew that it was like, this is it, honey. Like, this is it. This is where you're supposed to be.
Yeah, it was your Midge Maisel moment.
So Marvelous Miss Maisel came out, I think, 2 weeks. It premiered after I left my ex-husband.
Wow.
I will say, because I was in such bad shape. That show saved me.
Because yeah, I get it.
during my ex and I were dating and our marriage, my stand-up career was moving at like a snail's pace. It just was, our relationship was just sucking all of my energy. I had no, like, life to, like, go really do this. So like I did it as much as I could, but it wasn't to a place where it was like, okay, this is like, you're working at a place where it's like on a career level. And that year I was like, okay, I'm ready to go do it. And I hit the ground running and I started doing mics every single day. And that year in November, I left my ex-husband. We separated January 2018. I asked for a divorce July 2018. November, myself and Dave as well, we did our very first shows at the New York Comedy Festival, which is like one of the biggest comedy festivals. And I helped the producer like kind of like build up the show on social media. I sold the entire place out. It was 350 seats and I worked my ass off and I with all social media, and I sold the place out. I crushed it. So did Dave. God, he did so good. And the next day was our first date. And because of that show, I then a couple of weeks later got asked to headline at Caroline's for the first time.
Wow.
And it really was this. And it's sad because it's like, I know that like my ex feels awful about that, but it's like our marriage was 100% holding me back. Mm-hmm. And I could only succeed by leaving.
And
I don't want to like put that one on his shoulders. Like I think that that is unfair to him. That is a reality, but it's also like not his fault entirely. Like it falls within like that, like we were just too toxic for each other. Mm-hmm. And it really was like the minute I left, my career took off. It completely took off. I would not be where I am. I would not be doing the advocacy. I would not be headlining if I didn't get divorced.
Yeah, and I get it.
Yeah, it really does. And it's, and there are totally times where like I'm doing something where I'm like, shit, he would think this is so cool.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he would really like this. Like, this is really neat. And that does know that like as friends, we can't share this moment.
Yeah.
But it's just, there's no way him and I can ever, like, the trust is gone. And that goes for me as well. Like, I don't think that him and I could ever trust each other again, which sucks. But that is the reality of the situation. And it was a hard truth to come to where it was like, fuck, I was never going to succeed with you. And that was really hard.
You know, I always say it like, I so understand what you're saying. And actually, and Maisel did this, it was very similar for me. It was like very much my trajectory is Midge's trajectory. And, you know, with the two, I have two kids and I always say, sometimes I'll say I felt like I was sold a bill of the wrong bill of goods or whatever the phrase is with my ex. But then I reframed it and I said, actually, he was sold something that he thought I was, right? Which was a stay-at-home mom who took care of the XYZ, but actually I am a CEO who's trying to change the world. And so he actually didn't get what he thought he was getting, right? So not. I feel like it's the same thing with you, right? He didn't get what he thought he was getting with you. You're actually, your star is so much brighter, mm-hmm. right? And so, you know, it's like, it's not that it was anybody's fault. It's just that you were not that person at that time. And now, you know, that was all culminating to where you are now.
Yeah. I mean, I know if he was here, he would be like, oh no, she totally was like, you know, was, you know, this, I know that he would be like, no, I wanted her to have her career. Like, I know that he would be saying that. But I think to have the career I wanted, what he needed in a relationship, it just the two did
100%. And you need to have a partner. I mean, it sounds like Dave supports everything you do, right? You have to have a partner that's going to support you to be a successful person.
Oh, no. Yeah, no, it takes. And again, and this is why, like, I needed to put my disclaimer up with, like, both my ex and I fucked up. And it's not a knock against him. This was just, we were not right together.
Mm-hmm.
And Dave and I are, because like it really is, we both see what each other wants. Mm-hmm. We both, not only do we understand what each other wants, we also love the person exactly as they are now. Right. Neither you or I look at each other as projects. Neither of us look at each other with as like, oh my God, you have so much potential. Mm-hmm. We love each other exactly the way we are right now. Yeah. If I had a child, and this started at the beginning of a relationship. If I had a son who was exactly like Dave, I would be unbelievably proud of him.
Yeah.
And that was at the beginning of our relationship because he was such an incredible guy at the beginning of our relationship. It was just like, this guy is so amazing. There needs to be more Daves out in this world. This is such an amazing man.
Can you just tell us what is insemination, the podcast? Where did this come from? The whole background there. I know it's a lot.
Just but quickly. Do a tight
five. Do your tight five about insemination.
Okay. So I'm a sperm donor baby. I've known that since I was 14 years old, but it was always something that was just like kind of like my fun fact. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, when you do like two truths and a lie, it would always be like my truth, like I'm a sperm donor baby. And so it was it was just a fun fact. Like I used to use it as a way to flirt with guys in college. Like
college is weird.
We can understand why I was single for a long time. And I didn't, and it was, and so then there was a couple of things that happened. I think I was like 27, 28. When I learned that I was half Ashkenazi Jewish, I didn't know that. We were told that the donor was going to be like my dad, who is Irish Scottish. Mm. So the fact that I was half Ashkenazi Jewish was like, oh shit. And that was a big kind of, it was a huge revelation in my life. And the reason that it is for a few reasons. I have been asked if I was Ashkenazi literally my whole life. And unfortunately I've been dealing with anti-Semitism my whole life and I just didn't know what was going on. Yeah. So unfortunately not knowing my genetic makeup, put me in some very dangerous situations because I just didn't really understand what was going on. Mm-hmm. And that was looking back, it was just like, I really needed to know. It also was, I missed, once I learned that I was Ashkenazi Jewish and I could start genetic mirroring with my genetic family, the difference that made in my, I would say, my self-confidence in me, my body dysmorphia, the way I look, it was so huge when I was able to see myself within my community. And that was such an amazing, I went from hating my nose to absolutely loving my nose because I was told my entire life I needed to get a nose job. The amount of people who told me that.
But you had a grandparent that was a Holocaust survivor. So was that your mother's side?
It was my mother's side, but he's not Jewish. My grandfather was Roman Catholic Polish. Mm. He was part of what was called the Polish Underground, which was the Polish resistance. So he was caught as a political prisoner at the age of 14, but he was fighting against the Nazis at the age of 10. Wow. But he was in Auschwitz and Mauthausen, but as a political prisoner, not so he was marked for labor by death, not for extermination.
How wow. fascinating, though, yeah. that you have these two threads that sort of, right? Like, that's a really interesting thing.
And we know that some of the Polish underground, there was like obviously heavy anti-Semitism within Poland, sure. within the Polish people. Like that absolutely was the truth, but there was pieces of the Polish underground who were absolutely trying to get like the Jewish community out of Poland. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure my grandfather was part of one of those rings and just didn't know it. Because what he would do is would send messages to the Jewish community in the ghetto because he was an altar server at a church right outside like the ghetto wall. So while he was an altar server, that was his alibi. He would like send messages. Mm-hmm. And I remember him telling us that like he knew of a Catholic priest that was actively getting Jewish people out of Poland. Yeah. So that's why I'm like, I think he was part of a ring and just didn't know it because he always was like, I had no idea what was in those messages. But I think he was. And I always wonder, I'm like, did he get one of my donor sides out? Did he save one of my family members? And yeah. I, Yeah, I get into this whole, I would say, like, woo-woo shit about it. And it's just, like, I always do wonder. Yeah. But anyway, so I found out I was half Jewish. Then I found my donor a couple of years later, made it very clear that he did not want contact, which, fine. It was, like, unfortunate because I really wanted medical history, but, like, okay.
Okay.
But then what started the journey that you guys all now are witnessing was at 30 years old, 30, 31, a girl contacted me and she's like, I think you're my half sister. And that shook me to my core. And I was like, I have a half sister. And she was like, well, you have at least have three, because me, her full sister was also my half sister and she had already found another one. And I was like, what?
Were you raised with siblings?
I have a half sister who is 15 years older than me from my father's first marriage.
Okay.
And she's actually adopted. So her and I are, like, beyond not genetically related. And we were, like, not raised together, not in the same house. So, like, it was, I technically, yes, have a sister, but, like, I was not raised. I was raised like an only
child.
That was just not our dynamic.
So these three, you found out you had sisters. Did you meet these women?
I have not met them yet. So one of our sisters is, like, does not want anything to do with it. The one who I talked to, her full sibling is also just not ready. Like, they talk about it, but her and I are hopefully going to meet at some point. She's had a lot of health issues, so it's just not been able to happen quite yet. But since then, we've also found a brother as well. He also has not made any form of contact. So it's just, it hasn't happened yet, but this is what literally, this was my hyperfixation moment on it, because then I started talking to advocates going, because I had no idea this was possible for me. And I started talking to other experts and learning how the fertility industry is just a literal madhouse. And there's no regulations. And I'm like, how the fuck is this possible? So I started a series still on YouTube where, and you'll see my very first video talking about donor conception. It's called Are You My Daddy? And you'll see it. And the whole series started off as I want to find my siblings. That was literally the purpose of it. And learning how the fertility industry worked on the way. But as I got more and more into it and more people were, like, interested in it, and I started learning other people's stories, I was like, oh, this is way bigger than just me. Like, holy shit. This is huge. And the more I started, I would say, peeling back the onion, it was more of like, oh, no. We need – this is
– yeah.
Now we have to, it's like, I'm still obviously looking for my siblings, but the focus changed on, we have to change this industry. Have died. People are medically raped with almost no repercussion. Yeah. And there are pods of hundreds of kids out there and there is nothing stopping this industry.
Yeah.
And I just hyper fixated on it. And I still do. And people just started listening. And I just kept listening and talking to people. And it became this need to just be like, these stories have to get heard. These are not getting heard. No one is, no one understands how bad this is. And it is always something that I always tell, that I try and tell everybody is, the worst stories that I know about donor conception, I've not spoken about publicly yet, because either the person doesn't want me to, it's in the middle in the courts, or like, I have not said the worst. It is a dark, dark rabbit hole to go down to.
Yeah.
And this industry has just slid on by for decades unnoticed. And it's just, it's so wrong, because I could see, like, because my parents had a lot, they had fertility issues, and I could see the pain and the struggle and the trauma that inflicted, and the fact that they were actively taken advantage by this industry is like, that was so wrong.
Mm-hmm. And it happened a lot, I think.
It happens all the time. They know how to take advantage of infertility trauma. And it was like, these are people who literally will get a second mortgage on a house wanting a baby, which is something that so many people want. Like, that is understandable. And the fact that you have this multi-billion-dollar industry taking advantage of that and creating and profiting off of creating sentient human beings and then just leaving everybody to fend for themselves and not giving a shit whether that kid lives, dies, gets sick. It was just like, this is so horrible, and it does not need to be this way.
Yeah.
Should not. And how is this not front page news all the time?
So what can people, before you go, what can people do to support you in your work around this?
So, very exciting. I have, me and a couple of other amazing donor conceived people have put together the very first protest for donor conceived rights. And that will be October 15th in New Orleans, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Okay. And so what we are doing is we are protesting at the ASRM convention. ASRM is the American Society of Reproductive Medicine. They are the ones who create the guidelines for the clinics and cryobanks to follow. And they've made it very clear that we are not their top priority. Their top priority is the clinics and cryobanks and recipient parents. And not even recipient parents. It's really like it's
the money of recipient parents.
The money of the recipient parents. It's not really about, it's just their money.
So just to be clear, so the work that you do, because this is just my ADHD brain wants to make sure I'm right. It's really you are looking to advocate for the rights of the children, right, who are born of sperm donors.
Yeah, because donor conceived people the industry in itself is so unbelievably unregulated. They can create pods of 100, 200, 300 kids. There's nothing stopping them.
That's crazy.
Medical history all the time, which can end up in us dying. It can end up in getting us into diagnostic hells. I know donor conceived people who at age 15 have had 13 surgeries, who have cysts on their spine, their thyroids. The fact that the eugenics that exists in the industry, where if you have a recipient parent of color looking for a donor of color, it's unbelievably hard to find that. And sometimes those donors even cost more money. And there have been so many recipient parents of color who can't even find a corresponding donor to match their ethnicity. They end up having to choose a white donor. What does that sound like?
How interesting generationally. Well, let's go back, right? Like, you're talking, I mean, between your family of origin and also your biological, right? You're half Ashkenazi. You are literally breaking generational trauma.
It has to get done. It has to get done. And that's how I look at it, is it just has to get done. There's no reason for this pain to continue existing. There's literal no reason for it. It's just money.
And to listen to your podcast, right? So your podcast has all sorts of information. You talk to people.
So insemination, we interview donor-conceived people, doctors, geneticists, recipient parents, donors, and get all their kinds of stories and inputs to make sure that these stories get heard. But if you want to come to our protest, because we need to show solidarity in numbers, if you go to my website, www.laurahighfive.com, the five is spelled out, and there's a tab that's labeled protest. It has all the information on the protest. There's a sign up thing. Please do sign up so that because I do give email updates and stuff like that. I will be there. And we need to show solidarity in numbers. That is the only way they're going to care, is if we really have to show them, like, this is not just like a couple of little angry donor people venting their feelings. This is like a huge
a movement.
Yeah. And then, because we're going to need some laughs afterwards, I also will be headlining at the Howling Wolf at 8 p.m. that night, October 15th in New Orleans as well. So please join us, because, God, I'm going to need some fucking laughs after that.
Amazing. And you are an inspiration. You really are.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. But if you can't come to the protest and you're like, but I really, really want to help out, what can I do? Go to any of my social media and go to my link tree. And there is going to be a tab that says, like, help donor conceive people. Mm-hmm. Click that and it's going to link you to a GoFundMe. Any money that goes into there is going to go to the protest. It's going to go to gas. It's going to go to poster boards, markers, mm-hmm. water. It's going to go to all that supplies. We got so many wonderful donations, and I was able to get lodging for like a bunch of donor conceived people who would not have been able to make it to the protest.
That's awesome.
So we already got lodging for a bunch of donor conceived people. More, but please keep sending your money, because then I can give more money to donor conceived people to help them out with their travel expenses, with food costs there, because representation matters, and we need to have as many donor conceived people there as possible, because we need to get all of our voices heard and as many different kinds of voices as possible.
Amazing. Amazing. You are truly, you are like a movement that is, mm-hmm. is just getting started, really. To end the episode,
I will say it is a collective community of donor conceived advocates. Yeah. I am beyond proud to be part of. And this is, we all take on different facets of advocacy, and I'm just so unbelievably honored to work with people that I work with.
Yeah, it's a family, probably, right? It's like a family. Yeah.
We may not be genetically all related, but man, we are definitely a community.
I love that. Laura, if somebody's going through a fresh start, what would be some real quick wise words you could give to them?
Okay. Give me 1 second. Because I have this. So when I was going through my divorce, and I know this sounds so cheesy, but literally inspirational quotes that I found on Instagram was like, literally, yeah. I would read those before our couples therapy. I would, those would literally give me life again. So I'm going to read you the ones that literally I want to say changed my life. The one that did it. And the first time I'm going to start crying. Jesus. The first time I headlined, it was the first time I spoke about my divorce publicly, because I was so ashamed. I was so embarrassed. And I read this quote, and that's and I talked about it in my stand-up, but it genuinely it changed everything for me. And it says, everything you want in life is on the other side of fear. Feel the fear and do it anyway. And I cannot tell you enough, for people who are going through a fresh start, just do it, girl. Do it, baby. Yeah. It is going to be okay. It's going to suck. It's going to be hard, and it's going to be awful. And you are going to have days where you are literally bawling your eyes out, and it's going to suck. But I promise, your soul knows the way. You just got to listen to it.
Oh, I love that.
And just believe in yourself, and surround yourself. God, surround yourself by people who you know have your back. Find those friends. You know who they are. And anyone else, you cut the fuck out.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by good supportive friends is also friends who are going to call you out on your bullshit. Mm-hmm. Because you can't have friends that are 100% yes men. Mm-hmm. You have to have friends who are going to call out your toxic behavior as well, and hold you to your highest standard as well.
Yeah, 100%.
You know the way. You just got to yourself. Listen to that gut.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. Yeah. And our hardest question that we always ask people, I'm sure you have a good answer. What is the last thing that you ate and truly loved?
Okay. So I not to humble brag, but I will a little bit. I'm actually a very good baker. I'm a really, really good baker.
I don't know why that doesn't surprise me. I feel like that's very on brand for you.
And I made two desserts recently that I was so proud of. One was a TikTok recipe, and the other one was an Instagram recipe, because it was my my best friend who I've been living with for 15 years at this point. Mm-hmm. It was their birthday. And my mom's birthday, whose birthday is just a few days ahead of time, was their birthday. And so they always do like a joint birthday together because my mom essentially adopted my best friend as well.
That's very
sweet. So they always do joint birthdays together. So I made two different birthday desserts. And I made a raspberry lemon tiramisu as my mom's dessert and a chocolate crepe cake for my best friend's dessert. And this is where you're going to go. So you're going to go on to, you're going to go on to TikTok and you're going to type in raspberry tiramisu. And it's going to have this like raspberry curd that is on the top of it. It's going to be so beautiful and glossy. It's gorgeous. It was the most delicious fucking thing I've ever made. And it was, the recipe is just, it's killer. It's perfect. And then the chocolate crepe cake I did was, it was a tasty recipe that I found on Instagram. It is perfect. Both of them, let them sit overnight. That is my one tip to both of you. Let it sit. And with the raspberry tiramisu, you can totally use frozen raspberries. It doesn't have to be fresh. So don't worry, girl, you got it. They're fantastic. And I was very, very proud of those recipes. Those were ones that went in the book.
They sound amazing.
I love it. Well, Laura, we're going to let you go because I know you have a huge day ahead.
I would love to keep hearing you talking. But.
But we're just so moved by you and your energy, and you are so beautiful and so you are like a light worker. Like, I can see that you bring in, you know, so much goodness, and you truly want to change the world, and standing up on stage and making people laugh is changing the world. And I just want to like really say that you're bringing people joy, especially in these crazy times, right, that we need a lot of joy. So we are just, you know, so this was an amazing conversation. I'm going to be thinking about it a ton, and I feel like you are just at the beginning of whatever this world has in store for you. So thank you for being here.
Thank you. And thank you so much. And it's in my opinion, especially when it comes to divorce, having community like this is literally what we need. I'm so proud that our generation is getting divorced. Yeah. And I know that that's counterintuitive, but I'm very proud of us because I've noticed there are so many like millennials who are getting married and then like quickly turning around and getting a divorce because they realize, oh shit. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. And I'm so proud of us for doing that. And I hope the next generation is not going to, I hope the next generation is going to take it a step farther and not get into those things.
Yeah.
But I am so proud of us for not quote unquote sticking it out until we're in our 50s and miserable and hate it. And so much so that it changes who we are to such a bitter place. And I am so proud of us. And I'm thank you for doing this podcast. Thank you for inviting me on. And I feel just the same way. The energy and the safety net and just the warm light you both give off make it unbelievably so easy to be vulnerable and to talk about the things that we have to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you for listening to today's story. We're always here and we're proud of you.
A Fresh Story is produced by Fresh Starts Registry, the first and only platform for everything you need to begin again. You can read the show notes and learn more about today's episode at afreshstory.com.
As always, we want to remind our listeners that while we strive to provide accurate and helpful information, we are not medical doctors or mental health professionals. We want to remind you all that the information shared in this podcast is not a substitute for professional advice. We highly recommend consulting a qualified healthcare or mental health professional for any concerns or questions you may have. Remember, we are a podcast, but we are not licensed medical professionals. Always consult with your healthcare provider for any medical decisions. And as a gentle reminder, all opinions are our guests and do not necessarily reflect our own.